for tuning into Power Athlete Radio. Chris Burris joins us this week to discuss ESS60, a molecule which also serves as a powerful antioxidant. While this product is his baby, the crew doesn't shy away from pushing back on some of the claims surrounding this carbon-based supplement. Does it really help you sleep better? Does it really assist with focus and battle free radicals within the bod? Chris has some compelling evidence that says, yes, it actually does. Tune in to find out more about how to live forever. Here it is, episode 479.
Hey, Power Athlete Nation, welcome to another episode of the premier podcast in strength conditioning. What?
Sorry.
Dude, come on.
I had a
It's 2021. Are you sure? I thought we were getting rid of the ing. But are we keeping it? Strength conditioning,
Well, it's two ings for our hotline.
The
opportunity
old hotline, which we'll get into here in a second.
Yes.
We got a great podcast today. Our friend, Dr. Chris Burris, who is working with a company that, you know, he and his partner created ESS60, which is a pretty interesting product that they reached out and were interested in coming and talking on. And we're always interested in what's going on within the supplement market, especially when it comes to longevity and performance.
And Chris is one of the cool scientists out there.
You think he's really a scientist? I just thought he drove in on his Ducati, had his lab coat, and got in front of a plant. And next thing you know, he's over there talking sciencey stuff.
I mean, technically an engineer by trade, but he's able to apply his education to do some cool stuff within the company that he gets into here. Very science dense. I was struggling to keep up a little bit with some of the names y'all were dropping, but
no, he
riveting nonetheless.
Yeah, no, he referenced some good books, got into, antioxidants and nanotech and some really interesting stuff. So I'm actually interested to give this product a try and see if we can do the old Pepsi challenge. I know I know you've been taking it since we booked them on the podcast. They sent out some products for Texas Take, and just like everything, I kind of sit on it. And this is something that's probably been more prevalent in my life, but I've never been the person to volunteer to go first. I always default to somebody else so that I can see how this whole thing's going to go down and then kind of formulate an idea. Like in the NFL, whatever it is, you go first, I'll go second. Let me get a chance to see you make some mistakes. So when I saw you pounding it, I just kind of put it on the counter and was like, hey, I know we got a podcast with Chris. I want to learn about it, hear about it. And then from there, I'll be able to give him the old Pepsi challenge and the double blind.
Yeah, man, we do push back on Chris and challenge a little bit because we had a recent, I wouldn't call it recent, a previous podcast where we got a rope-a-doped into a hard product push. So we gave Chris a little business.
Yeah, that's right.
But he was able to share the background of what led to.
Wasn't that the red deer antler?
Yeah.
Oh God, that was some bullshit. And I had a tough time containing my disdain, especially when you started getting into what was the guy using? He was using the muscle testing, it's not applied kinesiology. Yeah, it is applied kinesiology where you use muscle testing, which has been shown to be some witch doctory as a deal for it. But
well, yeah, either way. But we were able to deep dive and Chris provided the history of his experimentation, and that's pretty cool. This is not just some get rich quick scheme. He invested they started with this in 1991. He's invested nearly a lifetime, almost his whole career, because he met his business partners in college.
Yeah.
And
it's pretty pretty interesting. He was talking a little bit about supplement fraud, but the part I found was the dividends in terms of sleep. And so he's working with a guy in terms of using the Oura Rings and how to manage sleep and see if this product is able to not only help people. And I think the thing that's pretty fascinating is they don't have, I mean, they obviously have the toxicity study for it that ended up becoming a longevity study when it, that was kind of the catalyst for this. But, the idea that they are working towards doing some double-blind research and some studies and getting that funded is pretty fascinating. And I always appreciate some of the anecdotal stuff. Like I think we've talked about, sometimes the research is good and sometimes the anecdotal stuff, when you talk to people that are doing it. But the other problem you run into is when people make or decide to do something like, hey, I'm going to take this product. What else are they doing? So we found this, that very few people make a life change, just a single life change. They kind of take a shotgun approach. I'm going to sleep better. I'm going to start exercising. I'm going to start eating better. I'm going to do this and this. And they do four or five things at once, I suppose, from just changing one. Like, hey, I'm going to exercise. Okay, great. Once I start exercising, now I'm going to check that and I'm going to improve my diet. Now I'm going to work on my sleep. And we tend to make wholesale changes. So I wonder, you know, if the people that are taking this are kind of making a wholesale change, or they're just merely dropping it in. But for the most part, I'm excited to give it a try and interested to see what you guys think about it.
For sure. Yeah. And Chris dropped a little product code at the end if you're interested. The same time, man, this is a fun conversation. I took a lot of notes. We save all the banter and the bullshit towards the end. If you want to learn about octopus and what
octopi.
Octopuses and what that has to do with olive oil, you got to wait till the end.
Yeah. Well, let's get into it.
Ready, ready.
And go.
Chris, welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. We're excited to connect with you. I've had the opportunity to dabble in some ESS 60.
Have you really? Have you been secretly taking ESS 60? Is the difference I've been seeing you in the gym? Because you look lethargic as fuck.
Sorry. But
battle.
My hair and my skin is just glowing, John.
You know,
what do you think holds it up, slick?
Is it maple syrup?
No. Nope.
Could this be the maple 60? Could this be the maple syrup of the supplement industry?
Chris, was I supposed to use this as a hair product or?
I actually have started. We're working on some skincare stuff because of testimonials that our customers have been giving us. So you can definitely use it that way. I know that my wife uses it, and actually our really Cassandra, our operations lady, uses it on her hair regularly.
Awesome. Well, what is this ESS 60? I mean, you're Chris Burris. You're the founder, creator. Just give us the 10,000 foot Matt Macker review, and we'll keep working it.
Sure. I'd like to start. I never wanted to be in the supplement industry, and we'll get to how I kind of ended up there. It all started with this molecule. So for those who are watching, you can see it. For those who are listening, it's a spherical molecule of 60 carbon atoms. You can picture it by picturing a soccer ball, where the lines on the soccer ball represent the bonds between the carbon atoms. So you have this spherical molecule of 60 carbon atoms. It's the first molecule that is a closed cage molecule that they ever discovered. In fact, the guys who discovered it here in Houston at Rice University won the Nobel Prize. They discovered it in 1985. By 1996, they won that Nobel Prize. It's so unique, that closed cage formation, that there's a new symbol in chemistry. The at symbol, which we know from our email addresses, is new to chemistry as of the discovery of this buckyball. That's one of the affectionate names of it. We call the product that's available for human consumption ESS60. So that initial discovery and then subsequent Nobel Prize, they won it because the material is pretty amazing. It's harder than a diamond. It's superconducting. It'll actually turn into a diamond. It's got six-fold symmetries, so you can fire it at 15,000 miles an hour at a plate of steel, where most molecules will just shred apart. This one will just bounce right back. It's great at holding electrons, which is kind of why it makes a great antioxidant. But really, I'm a carbon nanomaterial scientist. I started the business with my business partner, Robert, in 1991. And we're just happy-go-lucky carbon nanomaterial scientists until 2012. In 2012, they published the results of a toxicity study. They actually thought this molecule would be toxic for various reasons. And in that toxicity study, they gave rats water, rats olive oil, and then rats olive oil with ESS60. Instead of being toxic, those rats given, well, really the MyVitalC formula, lived 90% longer than the control group. So that's kind of a big deal. It's the single longest longevity experimental result in history. It is peer-reviewed published research, which is, of course, kind of a hallmark of anything that you want to hang your hat on.
And we can link that. And we can link that in the show notes. So if anybody wants to take a look at it.
Absolutely. I'll make sure I get that to you. And again, it was like, I always like to give kudos to the researchers because they were doing a toxicity study. They assumed this would be toxic. A Wistar rat typically lives 32 months. At 32 months, all of the control group were dead. So those rats that were given water, just water, were all dead. And at that point, really, your toxicity study is over because you can pretty concretely say it's not toxic because the rats given MyVitalC outlived the rats given water. But they continued to do the animal husbandry for another 30 months. So the rats given MyVitalC lived out to 62 months.
Were the rats just given water, no food?
No, it was regular food. Yes, so they actually did eat, which would, I think they would have died sooner.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was like, wow, a rat can live for 32 months on just water. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was a heck of a fast, right? That's a big big trend right now.
You know, God damn it! Now you got me on this because about 10 years ago, when fasting got kind of popular, I remember going back and looking at all the peer-reviewed research on it, and it just looked like a really fun, easier way to do caloric restriction. That all the studies were like feeding studies where they showed like decreased feeding windows versus extended. And at the end of the day, it looked like calorie balance. So if you need to, you know, fast to effectively give yourself a smaller feeding window, it works well, but there's no magic. And I think a lot of times with a lot of this stuff, and, you know, especially with supplements, the reason that at least the back of my hair stick up on everything is because it kind of sounds like magic. So to have actually something that's peer reviewed is kind of nice.
Yeah. It is one of the things that's kind of propelled this and kind of grown the market. We're still it's still a teeny tiny market. But it's interesting, you know, we talk about fasting because, you know, the result in this study was the 90% extension of life. The next best way to live longer, and it has a ton of research, is calorie restriction. You restrict your calorie consumption by 30% and you can extend your life by 30%. The research on that is in multiple animal models. So it's highly likely that it applies to humans just because they've tested it on so many different models. I call that the starve yourself one third to death diet. It may be a marketing thing, but nobody seems to sign up for that.
No.
And
at the end of the day, would I really want to live longer starving myself in like kind of like a sarcopenia, this fucking, you know, depreciated state? Like, what does my life look like in that extended period? I would rather be as virile and as strong and, you know, like not eat like an asshole, but like, you know, carry as much muscle mass as I can for as long and then go to bed and not wake up one day.
It's better to burn out than fade away.
Well, like the Highlander. But whenever I read these calorie restriction life extension things, I'm always imagining like some dude who's like, you know, Mr. Burns, who's, you know, too frail to get into society, but I'm going to live longer. And you're like, well, what does the quality of your life look like?
Yeah. And in David Sinclair's book, he talks about lifespan. He talks calorie restricted people and how they were like, even on warm days, were always wearing sweaters, you know, a la Mr. Burns. Like he needed a sweater all the time.
I love that book. I thought it was great. I recommended it last year as one of my, you know, books to read in 2020.
Absolutely. And he's kind of, so obviously this product kind of landed in my lap. Well, let's talk about that a little bit more, right? Sure. So this study comes out in 2012. And we actually started getting phone calls and people were like, hey, how much in a dose? And we're like, carbon nanomaterial scientist hats on. We're like, the dose? No, it goes into tires and ink and battery cells and solar cells. You don't put it in the human body. Now, this was despite the fact that the literature is pretty clear. So carbon 60 is for industrial applications. And there's peer-reviewed published research that shows when it's improperly processed, it's actually harmful. And then ESS-60 is C60 that's been processed for safer human consumption. And even back in 2012, when this toxicity study came out that turned out to be a longevity study, it's pretty clear that if you process it properly, it's safe. Even so, like, we're conservative scientists, this isn't really the industry we wanted to go into. So mid-2013, when we started getting more and more of these phone calls, we actually added not for human consumption to our labeling. So imagine from 1991 until 2013, we didn't have to bother with that labeling. And in mid-2013, we're like, hey, not for human consumption. But we did sell the ESS-60 in oil so that you could recreate the rat experiment. And from mid 2013, kind of keeping moving forward, kind of the next pivot point was end of 2017. People would call us with just amazing testimonials, like my knee pain is gone, and we're kind of like, you mean the knee pain of your rat is gone, right? Like, like that's what we weren't actually encouraging people to take it.
God, this sounds like the, you know, like the performance enhancing peptides that are going around where they're, you know, not meant for human consumption. And then I get a ton of emails daily from people asking me questions. Hey, like, you know, either consults or just, you know, asking here on the podcast. And I had a guy send me this, hey, I'm taking all these peptides. So I researched them, and like every one of them's like, not for human consumption, not for human consumption, not for human consumption. And so you're going on, then you end up on some like weird Reddit form or some weird bodybuilder page that these dudes are like, oh, I took this and I was, you know, it's just like, and
well, even when I was living in Tampa, I was on a raw milk kick. I had to go to a specific store, and then on that gallon, it said big stamp, not for human consumption, but it sold at like a health foods store.
Man, it's a weird market. Is I mean, obviously we're carbon-based life forms. Is that any factor associated with this? I mean, is this filling in some holes that maybe that are happening with the deterioration?
Well, we don't think so. Because really this molecule, although it is a naturally occurring molecule, so if you collect the soot from a candle, you'll find parts per million, parts per billion, so obviously very tiny amounts of this molecule. And so it's not something that our body, like you, I mean, we could go back in history and say, hey, maybe the buckyball was more available, you know, whatever, you know, back to the Bible, they talk about, you know, people living 200 years. Maybe it was around then, but that's like, you know, that's less scientific discussion and more kind of over a beer, conversation, right? What we do know is that it's an antioxidant. You have to be really careful when you're speaking about anti-inflammatories. You guys probably know this, that for whatever reason, the FDA has declared that talking about inflammation is talking about disease. You guys work out, you've felt inflamed, and you know it's not necessarily disease. So, but for whatever reason, the FDA has said, if you're talking about inflammation, then you're talking about disease. So what we say is it fits very naturally in an anti-inflammatory diet, and that diet's been associated with reduced incidences of stroke, reduced incidences of heart disease, and actually people, you know, the blue zone, people living a longer life.
Well, and, I think that there's a distinction between acute inflammation and chronic inflammation. And, you know, I was just watching a deal yesterday where we had a podcast and they were talking about God, what did he use? It wasn't geriatrics. It was biatics for people that are super heavy, you know, like the people they got to cut out of their house. And we were going through it, and it's like every one of them's like, no, but I drink Diet Coke, you know? And then it's like, well, you know, on a calorie basis, you know, Diet Coke's not that harmful, but when you're, you know, drinking it, like, is it causing systemic inflammation that's maybe, you know, leading to some of these issues? So,
well, and then like one stat I read is you take, I think it's one teaspoon of whatever fake sugar you want, and you're killing 50% of your gut bile, right? And we're just becoming more and more aware of how important, you know, that gut biome is. And so, yeah, I used to be one of those people. I run half marathons. My wife and I run half marathons, and one of them I was training, and I had this crazy calf problem. And my chiropractor was like, "So, how much water do you drink a day?" And I was like, "Well, how much does the Diet Coke count?" And she said, -1. I was like, well, then -6 waters a day. Because I was just, you know, I was like, hey, it's less calories. I, for whatever reason, I'm not a big water fan. I just don't like enjoy drinking. I'm not drawn to drinking water. And I was to Diet Coke. But I cut that out, and that made a big difference for actually my calf injury. So, I'd stay away from them. I have one like every quarter, maybe.
So it is this like, is olive oil uses the transport for this? That's kind of how you're packaging it. And then that's because it's probably obviously the molecule is so small that there is no kind of supplement. It has to be in some form of transport.
Yeah. Well, so you can get the powder, and it's just a black powder. The problem is that black powder is not water soluble. So it really just kind of goes through your system and gets excreted. By actually dissolving it in olive oil, and we actually have an olive oil product, MCT oil product, and avocado oil product. By dissolving it, you're getting down, you know, when it's in solution, it's actually down to the monomolecular level. So you've got individual ESS60 molecules floating around in the oil. And then, so you can consume those, and there are a lot more bioavailable.
So, how, I mean, if we were to drill down, like, how does it really work? I mean, I know we've talked about, you know, the effects of it, but like, how does it affect the body in terms of longevity? Do you understand, or I'm sure you understand the pathways associated with it.
Thank you for your confidence. the reality is I like to say smarter people than me are going to figure that out. We do know that it gets into the mitochondria. We do know that it's an incredible reactive oxygen species sponge, right? So it's a great antioxidant. If you were in a room filled of kind of medical experts who understand intimately the mitochondria and ask them, hey, would it be beneficial to have a free radical sponge in the mitochondria during these ATP processes? They would all say yes. Is that the exact mechanism? It's just a theorized mechanism that they haven't, that hasn't been explored yet. And I actually have, my director of research is a former physician, and I have interesting conversations with him about maybe the molecule works as an antagonist, right? So we've got this understanding. In fact, the result of calorie restriction is that your body starts getting rid of zombie cells, senescent cells, right? And so if this molecule's in there and it's actually being an antagonist and causing your body to kind of clean house, then that could have the impacts. I don't know that any one of those explains our most consistent testimonial, which is our customers take this in the morning, they report mental focus and energy during the day, and then better sleep that night. And I'm actually doing a sleep study. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Oura Ring. I've got an Oura Ring.
Yeah, Harpreet, who's their CEO, is a friend of ours and been on the podcast, and we've tested it.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. So I got this because I got in contact with, through kind of getting onto podcasts, with a professor at the University of San Diego, who's a consultant for Oura Ring. And he's like, hey, let's do, I'm like, hey, I've got this. I think most supplement companies don't actually reach out and try and get research done. I'm trying to get research done. Let's kind of map out what our most consistent testimonial is. And he was all on board. Then COVID hit. You guys may know that this ring turns out to do a reasonable job of identifying COVID, even pre-symptom.
Yeah, with the pulse ox.
It's actually the temperature.
Oh, with the temp?
Okay. Yeah, and so you got to have a baseline. You can't throw it on today if you thought you got infected today. But if you've got a good baseline, they're able to do a good job. And I think the NBA has even asked or authorized their players to wear them as kind of a preemptive, you know, let's identify COVID. And I know that I'm trying to think of somebody that I know I had a conversation with. He actually said, I think it was a physician. I'm going to be on his podcast next week. He was saying that his wife, it kind of warned her that she was sick right at the time that she was getting COVID. Oh, wow. Anyway, so Benjamin, the professor at the University of California, San Diego, he's just been waylaid. Like, you know, you can imagine the press is contacting him. You've got some device that's kind of the future of these wearable health devices. And so he's been inundated. But we've continued to do the survey part of our sleep study and have some very good results. And what we do in that study is we get 10 days of their survey data. So we're asking them, how good was your sleep last night? How quickly did you fall asleep? How restless was your sleep? And then how do you feel today? And that data is, and then we do that. We collect 10 days of data before they ever try the product, 10 days on, 10 days off, 10 days back on. And the results so far, we've got about 3 people who have gone through the whole process, are pretty good. And that kind of isn't surprising because of all those testimonials. Now, when you start talking about all the other kinds of testimonials that we get, and I can share some of my own, knee pain, help with migraines, there's just lots of things. By the way, the FDA has not evaluated our product. It's not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease. And you know, whatever response you might have could vary very much. And the only testimonials I'll ever share are people that I can get back in contact with. I don't think like, oh, one customer told me another customer did this. I wouldn't share that type of testimonial. With all these really good testimonials, if they're just getting better sleep, like we know that sleep is good for your mental, physical, and emotional well-being, that could explain everything. What's interesting about the process with our product is you take it in the morning and then sleep better at night. I'm aware of only 2 other things that you can do in the morning to sleep better that night. One of them is exercise, right? I mean, obviously, if you exercise anytime during the day, but if you exercise in the morning, you'll sleep better that night. And the other is actually getting exposure to the sun so you can get your circadian rhythm in line with the rising and falling of the sun. Everything else that's supposed to help you sleep, and there are actually some herbs out there that I would recommend, but the sleep aids that get prescribed, they're just, you know, there's a book, I don't know if you guys have read it, Why We Sleep by Dr. Matthew Walker.
Yeah, and Dr. Kirk Parsley, who's another expert, who's actually a buddy of ours that is here in Austin, was a former Navy SEAL and then was a SEAL doc for 18 years and has done more research on sleep and really shitty sleep than anybody else I know. But yeah, Dr. Matt's book's excellent.
It's like it's crazy how important sleep is. Like we all as a society, I think, say, oh, sleep is really, really important, you know, unless you got something else to do.
Other one is hydration. Hydration being a major player, and ask anybody that's gone out and had a hard night drinking if all of a sudden they had a restful sleep. And the way it was explained to me was like the worst hangover that you die from is actually dying of thirst. So, you know, hydration also plays a key function within sleep.
So it's interesting that you mentioned hangovers, because one of my conversations with Benjamin, the professor who's a consultant for Oura Ring, was I was on the phone with him like, oh, you probably have some interesting sleep data on when people drink. He's like, oh, yeah. And he like sent me over his. As soon as you have two drinks, it actually takes a while, a lot longer for your resting heart rate to drop down. So normally when you go to sleep, it's just pretty flat and it drops. We've had testimonials of people saying that it's mitigated hangovers. And when I looked at my data after a couple of drinks, it actually was flat from the beginning, right? So I didn't have this this slow decrease from a higher resting heart rate to a lower resting heart rate. That actually was my heart rate for the evening. So
are you seeing like an age dependent issue? I mean, I know as we age in mitochondria, we lose mitochondrial density. Obviously, you know, a larger aerobic base and continue to train and lift weights allows for you to increase your mitochondrial density. I'm just wondering if like, you know, kids that are 18, 20, 25 years old, opposed from somebody who's taking the product 60, 70 years old, if like the, you know, cause you said that this kind of plays within that mitochondrial pathway.
Yeah. So, I think that I've kind of noticed that the healthier somebody is, maybe the less that they notice. Mm-hmm. But that's, I'll be honest, I don't have data on that. Like that's just kind of feeling I have. What I can tell you though, is I've got two testimonials from some employees, when they the next day after their first serving of the product, one of them plays indoor soccer. It's a total sprint sport. It's kind of like hockey. You do line changes. He said he went from 10 minutes on the pitch to 20 minutes on the pitch. Even if he was exaggerating and it was only 15, that's a significant amount of additional sprinting. Couple that with the other guy that he used to work with me. He was a former professional football player in the AFL. He and his wife is a trainer, were running stairs at a stadium the day after their first serving. He noticed and she noticed the difference in him and his ability to run those stairs. And I've got actually one other, it was kind of funny because I recorded it and it was just absolutely filled with expletives about, you know, what the hell is in this stuff. So that's kind of healthy people experience, you know, having a really positive experience. So I don't know. And I've got a couple of testimonials. I would say 3% of people don't really experience anything. And from my perspective, I'm kind of lucky because, you know, this isn't like I went back in the lab and created this and I'm trying to save the world. And if somebody tells me it didn't work, I'm just devastated. Right. That's not this scenario. In fact, I think most people become supplement people one of two ways. They decide that they want to be wealthy and they decide they're going to do it with supplements. And I have no problem with people being wealthy. It's just not how I ended up here. The other is they have a physical problem, right? A physical challenge with them or themselves or a loved one. And then they solve it with supplementation. And now they want to save the world. And hopefully it doesn't surprise you. I'm not against people saving the world. It's just not how I ended up here. Like in 1991, I started manufacturing this molecule. In 2012, they do this crazy, it's supposed to be toxicity study. And the result is longevity and 90% extension of life. And then now I'm kind of thrust into this market. Now, lucky.
So back in 91, when you started producing it, what was the market you were producing it for? Did I miss that part?
Research. So interesting. Like this molecule, not surprising that it won the Nobel Prize in 96, because in 1991, same year we started the company, there's an aggregating service that looks at what are the most referenced research papers across all research. All 10 of the most researched referenced papers in 1991 were related to either buckyballs or its sister molecules, fullerenes in general. So all 10. So this was a viral scientific community event from the discovery 85 all the way through 96. So we were selling to those research institutions. In fact, one of our jokes internally when people would ask us, hey, what's this good for? Well, it's good for funding. If you write a proposal about fullerenes or carbon 60, you were very likely to get funded because it was such an exciting thing at the time. And we sold to research institutions around the world from 1991, really like mid-2013, we started to have more of a consumer, right? That's when we started selling it so you could recreate the rat study. What's unique about that as a supplement company from 1991, really until 2017, everyone we sold our materials to had the ability to test our materials, right? So if we sold them a gram of ESS60 or a gram of industrial carbon 60, the first thing they would do is they'd give it to a research associate, they'd give it to a grad student, they'd take it back to their HPLC, and they'd test our material. And if we didn't provide them good material, then there was a problem, right? You get into, after the 2012 release of the 2012 result, toxicity result, people start hopping into this industry and just throwing industrial C60 into oil and selling it. Those companies have never had to sell to a customer who can actually test their product. Like I find it's really interesting. You go onto Amazon and you look at supplements and there's ratings, right? What does a 5-star rating on vitamin C mean?
On Amazon? Nothing.
Yeah.
Especially when you can pay people to leave reviews.
Also, right? Yeah. But the one thing we know it doesn't mean is that they took it into a, they either sent it to a lab or they took it to their own HPLC in their garage and tested it and confirmed that it's, you know, vitamin C. Like that's the one thing that we know didn't happen. So these ratings on, and I kind of, you know, we're on Amazon because we need the presence there, but it's disappointing to see in the C60 space, us losing some traction to people who, we've actually tested the product. It's not good. Like it doesn't have the concentration that they say they have in it, which is, you know, that's the whole reason we didn't want to get into supplementation.
We ran into this years ago where, I only felt comfortable recommending supplements from companies that I knew did some form of testing associated with it. It was done in batches like, Thorne or, who was, a few of the others that Dr. Tom had used over the years. So my doctor buddy out in Arizona, who's big into supplements. In my background, I played in the NFL and would go see my doc twice a year, and he would analyze my blood and kind of do some micronutrient testing and figure out like, hey, these are some supplement strategies to help you optimize. And I would only take stuff that he recommended because I knew it had been tested. And yep. It's pretty interesting when we started making some like supplement recommendations based off of that, people went out and they were using Amazon trying to, let me build a cheaper version of what you're recommending. And then people are like, I'm not getting any results from this. And I'd be like, oh, well, what supplements are you using? Oh, I was able to buy it for, $10 instead of 20 or instead of $50 on Amazon with all this hacked up stuff. And I'm like, you don't know what's the quality in that. Like, I remember looking at a study where they were using whey protein from China and the heavy metal content was high enough to fucking kill somebody. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, it's whey protein. You're buying it from China, but look at the heavy metals, look what's in it. I mean, is it really the most nutrient dense best that you can? But it's fucking whey protein. It's on Amazon.
Yeah. And it's got 5-stars ratings. It's got 300 5-star ratings. So it must be good. And again, what we know is they didn't take that whey protein, send it to a lab, and then go, oh, it's 5-star. Like that's the misconception that I think people have going onto Amazon. I read one article kind of as we were investigating getting into this industry, and the article was like 50% of supplements that are on the market don't have in them what they say they have in them, right? Now, that could be, you know, you could be hypercritical and say, oh, it says it has 1 gram per tablet and it's really like 0.999 grams, right? But that was one of the things, that article, and it was peer reviewed published research, was one of the things that I was like, I don't know if I want to be in this industry. And then sure enough, kind of in the C60 space, pretty quickly, actually, I don't believe in negative advertising. I think that brings the whole industry down. But I did a video on one guy because he literally has no C60 in it. It's like it's a sunflower seed oil and it's black, right? It just, which is not what you, if you put C60 into sunflower seed oil, it actually turns purple. This is black. So it's some sort of soot that he's making and potentially dangerous. And so I was comfortable doing a video because I didn't like, I'm not doing negative advertising on my industry. He's not even in my industry. He's just claiming to be in my industry. And so you see that we took 22 of the brands that are out there. They're low in concentration. It's just, you know.
Have you guys entered into like any, I mean, you obviously said that the molecule is, you know, there's researched, but I'm wondering about any peer reviewed kind of double blind studies where you've, you know, university backed, brought in people and, you know, given them placebo, obviously olive oil versus this product, and then, you know, tested them in various ways.
We're working on that. So kind of broad view, scientific process, have a hypothesis. In this case, the hypothesis was that it was toxic. Get a result. Okay, not toxic, 98% extension of life. That was published in 2012 and nobody stepped up to the plate to actually redo that. Mm-hmm. So we've actually already pulled the trigger and are doing the first kind of entry, the facility that we're working with, we're doing the first entry test that we need to do to recreate that study. So that's one study. We have one, and we're going to move these things into double blind studies in so much as we can afford it. Like that's one of the obvious things. It's a challenge to afford. But we'll move them in like this sleep study. If we get the opportunity, we'll move that into peer reviewed, published, you know, double blind study. We're doing one other test. A doctor in Tampa, Florida called me beginning of last year. I was like, hey, I'm going to run a couple patients through this protocol and we're going to do this DNA age test. And I really didn't kind of pay attention, but he called, I think it was in October of last year and shared with me, hey, two people went through it. They were actually kind of on the David Sinclair. So they were taking NMN, they were taking resveratrol and they were taking My Vital C. They did this DNA age test. I don't know if you guys know much about the accuracy of these tests.
Is it? The is it the follicles that they look at or the telomeres?
They're looking at telomeres. They're looking at methylation.
That's right.
And so I was digging into this and trying to understand it. And the original test that he did, he gave them the DNA age test. And then 6 months later, while doing the protocol, I gave him the test again. And apparently what most people are hoping for is that you only age 5 months from a, you know, methylation standpoint in those 6 months. What happened and the result that they got was those ladies actually, one reverted in age by like 1.6, something close to that, years. And the other one was like 2.8 years. And so he called me, he's all excited. And we're like, yeah, we want to support this study. He wanted to change from DNA age to true age, which is by True Diagnostics. That's the company. And like, hey, you're changing some variables. Let's go ahead and run a 4-person test. Like, let's kind of ease into this because it's expensive. And so that result should be out soon. He's probably already drawn the blood and sent it off to True Age. So we're just waiting on the result.
Well, whenever I've looked at any of that stuff, and we were talking a little bit earlier about fasting and autophagy and clearing of metabolic garbage. It's always hilarious when you look at the studies, the greatest result for autophagy comes from exercise. So It's like exercise is by far the fountain of youth, and consistent exercise, building an aerobic base, making sure you're getting, you know, max motor unit recruitment, lifting some weights and, you know, maybe being able to go long, go hard, go short, go long. I mean, you know, this kind of varied deal. But the people that when I read, because this was some Ben Greenfield hacky stuff, but the people that had, I think it was the greatest telomere length, were the people that consistently ate or exercised the most.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's some really interesting things where if this product is actually kind of, and I hate to say the term anti-inflammatory, but if it reduces inflammation, makes people feel better, then theoretically they should be able to go out and train at a higher level pain-free.
Yeah. That is like testimonials that we're getting. And to kind of continue on my testimonials, one of them is I am a geeky scientist. I used to get migraines. I have a spreadsheet back to 2014 tracking my, I was trying to figure out like what was causing my migraines, you know, an excessive workout, a late night, whatever. And I used to get 4 or 5 migraines a year from 2014. When I started taking the MyVital C on a regular basis in 2018, I didn't get a single migraine. And you couple that with my wife, I always remember she used to get 9+, and I remember the number 9 because they would prescribe her a medication, but they would only give her 9 per month. So any migraine after the 9th, she just had to muscle through. And she went when she, it took me a while. I finally convinced her to try the product.
She's your wife. Therefore, nothing that you're working on can be of value.
Exactly. I know nothing. And I accept that. That's all right. Like, that's how it is.
It's actually called proximity bias. This is a real deal where the closer you are to somebody, the less of an expert they are. That's why you can't give your parents advice. That's why nobody in your family will ever believe you. And, you know, even people in your own town, but yet you go 3,000 miles away and you're a fucking genius.
Yeah. Yeah, I worked with a pediatrician once, and he said he had arrangement with another pediatrician that he couldn't talk to his own wife about their children, you know, and the medical state of their children. They had to like cross reference because of the proximity virus. That guy over there that pediatrician that's your friend actually knows stuff, and you don't. Yeah, it's interesting. So I finally got her to take it. And she's down to one migraine, like once a month or once every other month.
Did you ever figure out a mechanism? It's kind of interesting that both you and your wife both got migraines. I've never had a migraine. I don't think you've ever had a migraine.
My mom had a lot, so I don't know if I should anticipate that when I get older. I don't know, but
I don't know. I don't.
I have no idea what it feels like. Maybe I had one. Maybe I didn't.
I knew somebody that had a migraine once, and they threw up, and they looked pretty fucked up. Like it was a bad deal.
Yeah, my first one was the worst, and what migraines became to me is I would see like these little stars, like, you know, kaleidoscope light, and then that would go away, and I would just have, it would just be painful. Like, it was just painful. It didn't take me out of commission, but there was probably 20 minutes where I couldn't read because I couldn't focus on the thing in front of me, and then that would go away, and then I could survive, and maybe I'd take, well, really if I were to get one, I would take more of my product. Cause I don't know if you know this, olive oil on its own is actually a good anti-inflammatory and a good, pain reliever. Like 3 tablespoons is the equivalent of a Tylenol dose.
Well, look at the research on olive oil, there's direct, I mean, this is, you know, peer reviewed research. I remember Dr. Tom sent me this years ago, that like greater feeling of wellness and better, you know, you talked about blue zones. I mean, olive oil and especially monounsaturated fats, you know, are a key player in that. So, you know, we always recommend that if somebody's going to consume fat, a mix of saturated and monounsaturated fat, you know, from obviously saturated from coconut oil, but, you know, also some animal products, but monounsaturated fat being ideal from olive oil. Is there an effective dose? I mean, I'm wondering, like, I know it's packeted, I've seen techs crushing them, but I didn't know if there was like, you know, 1 a day, 2 a day, is it based on weight? Is it based on age? Like, how do you necessarily, like, what's the effective dose?
So I basically took the original kind of dosage in that initial study, did an allometric calculation, which is basically, we understand
that. A rat weighs 4 pounds and a human weighs 180.
Man weighs 200.
You're going to need.
Yeah, no. Well, if you did just that, it's actually a full cup. It's literally a full cup. What the allometric calculation does is take into account, I'm super geeky, so this is really cool, takes into account the metabolism. Yeah. And it turns out a good way to take into account metabolism is to take the surface area of the animal. So basically they take surface areas of rats compared to in general surface area of humans. And then that allows them to figure out like, what is the dose? And you know, they do this all the time because your initial studies on drugs are in rats. And then when you take them to humans, you know, you've got to account for that metabolism difference.
Well, and a lot of times when you look at those studies, the amounts that they use in the rats is so far exceeding. Like I remember seeing, like it was the aspartame study where they were using rats and it was like the equivalent of drinking 4,000 sodas a day. was the volume that they were giving them. So it's pretty interesting. Like when you see those rat studies, you always have to go back and look at like, well, how much were they giving them? And then how does that extrapolate into like practicality into our world? And then you're like, oh, okay, well, nobody's going to drink 4,000 of these, but that's how they have to run the studies.
Yeah. And in reality, I mean, we need to be doing some dosing studies. That's like you get into the nuances of, okay, well, is it 1 mL? Is it 5 mL? Is it 1 mL twice a day? Like there's a lot of variables. I don't know. I just read about the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine, and it's got a 66% efficacy, but it's just a single shot. And I'm like, the Moderna one's 50% after the first shot, and then it gets to 95. Maybe you should just take another shot of the Johnson & Johnson. Like, these things are really complex issues to ultimately resolve.
Well, and the other one, and especially on that COVID one, I was reading about it actually yesterday, they had 48,000 data points that they calculated in less than a month. And then they put it out before FDA approval. And as you know, working through, you know, data points, especially within doing studies, to analyze 48,000 individuals for a month, I mean, that feels extremely rushed and not, I would say, as detailed as I would like. And also, what's the long-term ramifications? I mean, to be able to track people for a month on something like this when we've never been able to develop a vaccine for the coronavirus? So.
Yeah, no, I am a little nervous about how quickly this has happened. I'm also, as a scientist, kind of excited, and I would take it, and my brother's in line to take it. This new mRNA kind of style of vaccine where you're like, hey, let's get the body to produce something that the body can fight. That sounds like that statement should end with, well, what could go wrong? And it feels like, you know, a lot could go wrong potentially. Yeah, no. I don't want to dissuade anyone, but it is a new technology.
Well, somebody asked me about it, and I was like, I am not at a high risk. If somebody was an elderly patient or somebody was metabolically broken or you had some issues or you were a frontline worker and in some situation, I think that that's a wise decision. But for us, I mean, well, you know, we kind of, I mean, like yeah. we, other than sitting at this table, social distance, like my, you know, like the environment we're in is one that's, you know, based on health and conducive. And, you know, I know I've personally been exposed about 10 times. I've been tested for, come back negative, no antibodies. And for the most part, you know, make sure I get tested and vitamin D levels are high and supplement and all this other stuff. And it's just kind of, you know, and I wash my hands, which is always a big one, which is pretty amazing. Yeah. We're not hearing about anybody getting flu this year. And I think it's because people are washing their hands.
Yep.
So.
Well, and isolating. Yeah. Right. So, So I think flu in general is not as communicable as COVID and certainly not the newer strains. And so you're already protecting against a more virulent strain of virus, and that those protections help you with the flu.
What's kind of amazing is, you know, they were so quick to rush into a vaccine. And I understand that there was this kind of idea, like we have to have a way to fight this. But I always thought that, like, how come there wasn't more emphasis putting on finding effective treatments or, you know, hey, let's analyze substances that we've had around that might potentially fight this. Like, I always thought it was interesting. Trump gets it. And then they were like, oh, this experimental cocktail. So I look up the cocktail and it was like a mix of like dexamethasone, which is, you know, and in every single training room in America as a, you know, liquid corticosteroid and zinc. And they were going through this stuff. And I'm like, wait a minute, none of this is experimental. It's experimental because he's using it in that way. And I just think that was kind of weird that they were so quick to run to a vaccine when we might have potentially looked at some other ways to treat it.
Well, and I think we also like the data on deaths due to COVID drop, you know, was dropping even as the infection rate was increasing. So they were, you know, things that mistakes that they made in the beginning, they were learning from them. And,
frontline doctors are pretty sharp. You bring those guys in. I mean, there's some really intelligent individuals on those front lines. All of a sudden they're making mistakes. I mean, we figured out pretty quick that it wasn't a respiratory and that people went on respirators were having heart attacks and strokes. And when they stopped using the respirators, all of a sudden now here's a, you know, an issue. And those doctors stopped making those mistakes and started, you know, making modifications. And next thing you know, they start saving people because they're not making the same mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, I certainly don't blame him. Like, you're in this situation where you've got a mass of patients with the same thing you've never seen before. Like, kudos to them for being on the front lines and being in harm's way.
Yeah, no, I do. Those guys were, you know, out there kicking ass, and I appreciate hearing the stories of like, hey, these are the ways we were treating it, and we started winning the war on this thing, and they weren't necessarily waiting around for research or somebody to come help them. And those guys got to be commended. No, but I'm with you. I'm not by any means anti, but I'm also cautious enough to be like, hey, you know what? Like, there's a lot of information we don't know, and to rush into something without a good informed decision just isn't intelligent. So it's kind of at least for me, and people ask me, and I'm like, I'm kind of a moot point. Like, there's people that need it a lot more than us. Let them get it, and hopefully saves them. Like, if I got it, I'll be okay.
Yeah.
My dad just got it yesterday. So he did the two shot one. He's in Houston. So I'll be checking in daily.
Well, Hank, that deal with Hank Aaron where they were trying to because they were saying that the black community was more distrusting and wasn't getting vaccinated at the same rate. So down in Atlanta, they brought some, you know, local sports heroes in to, you know, on the news and to give vaccinations and to kind of, you know, show people it's okay. And then Hank Aaron dies like 8 days later. I'm like, oh God, you know, passed away in his sleep. And I'm like, he was 86. He lived a great life. Like, this probably isn't real good for the vaccine, but you know, hey, this is what we've been dealt.
Unfortunate event, man.
So, the dose in each one, like, you know, as it comes prepackaged, that dose is the same dose extrapolated out that was done in the rat studies back.
Yeah. So that's, because the rat study, they started with a much higher dose. A more frequent dose. And then they went to a less frequent dose and then even a less frequent dose. So they like started daily, went to weekly, and then went to biweekly. Interesting in that original rat study, and this will be something that we do differently, they never gave the rats any dose until month 10, and then they stopped at month 17. So they didn't continue through the rest of their life. Like, even though the last dose was at month 17, all of the control rats were dead by month 32. The rats given MyVitalC lived out to month 62. Wow. So very interesting things. There's still, you know, lots to know what might have happened had they been continued to give the dosing through the rest of their life.
What do you think the mechanism there was?
I don't know. And we talked about olive oils. I want to share this before going to get back into that, is that the group given olive oil actually lived 30% longer in this particular study.
Wow. So where are you guys sourcing your olive oil from?
So we source it from a couple of places. We tend to go to like small batch out of Tunisia so that we can get, you know, of course, it's extra virgin olive oil, cold pressed and organic. Our facility isn't labeled organic yet, so we don't have like the USDA organic on the bottles. But the only thing that would be relevant to that is an organic product that goes into our product. Out of Tunisia.
Okay.
I always kind of share with people, listen, if you're taking any amount of olive oil, that study says you should be taking more. Like, that's probably a good thing to do.
that's kind of an interesting one. When you look at like people's diets, especially westernized diet, they're usually pretty low in monounsaturated fats. And, you know, those have been shown to, you know, lower the, you know, bad cholesterol and raise the good cholesterol pretty, you know, pretty one-to-one. I mean, that's not mythology at this point. I mean, everybody understands that piece. So
I don't know if you know of Dr. Gundry. He's written a book, Plant Paradox, Longevity Paradox. And what he says is the purpose of food is to get more olive oil into your mouth.
Okay.
I also like his phrase, I want you to die young at a very old age.
Yeah, you right? know, I had this conversation recently with someone where they asked, they're like, hey, would you want to live to be, what do they say? Like, would you want to live to be like 150 years old, or would you want to live to be 75 years old as if you were 25? So you could be 25 for 75 years, but then all of a sudden it would end. And I was like, I'll take 25 for 75 more so than live out to about 150 years. I mean, the only people that looked like they were doing okay at 200 years were in the Bible.
Yeah. Well, and so you're that point, like I have this conversation about this test result, 90% extension. If that applies to humans, that means our average lifespan would be 152. And people are like, well, why would you want to live longer? I've always been a guy who's wanted to live longer. But when I reframe it, and I say, listen, if you had the same physical capacity and the same mental capacity that you do today, would you be interested in living longer then? And like, okay, it's not universal. There are still people who probably need to, you know, do some soul searching. But most people will transition from, oh, I don't want to live longer to, well, yeah, if I can have my health, then I would like to live longer. And I always like to joke, there were no notes in that 2012, it was done out of Paris rat study, where those rats that were living to 62 months were walking around with, you know, little rat walkers and dragging little oxygen tanks, right? They lived healthy rat lives for 90% longer than, you know, those rats given water.
Are you familiar with Dr. Michael Rose?
Who, I'm not.
He's an evolutionary biologist out of UC Irvine. You know, when they look at evolutionary biology, it's really broken into two parts. It's like pre and post Michael Rose. And I got a chance to hear him speak a few times. He's got a bunch of stuff on life, you know, how to live longer, life extension and all this. And he did a really pretty fascinating study on fruit flies where he went out and, you know, they went to some orchard in Maine and got fruit flies that had been there for hundreds of years and brought them back into his lab. And a fruit fly lives about 7 days. Took those batch of fruit flies and kept them on, you know, apples or, you know, some ancestral diet to them, and then took their next generation and brought them over and put them on a mixed diet. I think it was like a bananas and apples. Took another generation and just put them on something that they'd never been exposed to, like bananas, and then tracked their health. And he basically set this whole model up of, like, you know, how much they, you know, reproduce and how they fly, and basically tracked their health over 7 days. And the you know, they all saw a decline at about 4 days, which would be, you know, they extrapolated 1 day for every decade for us. So at about 40 years old, and the fruit flies that continued to eat their ancestral diet ended up not declining as much, whereas the other ones tanked. And he gave this talk at, I think it was AHS Ancestral Health Symposium in like 2011. And he's got a bunch of talks on YouTube, but it was pretty interesting. And what he extrapolated out of this was that as people age, when they hit about 40, they have to return to their ancestral diet to continue to hold longevity. So he's given this talk, and it was pretty interesting because he was talking about research and this, and he like referenced a date that he like, I want to say, graduated, got his PhD in like the late 50s. And I'm like, how old is this dude? So I get on, I look, and he's in his mid 60s. I thought he was in his 40s. Maybe his 40s or 50s. Like, he looked great. That alone was by far the best selling point for his talk. I mean, I bought his book and I really dove in, and it was pretty interesting. Like, and I think at the time he was talking more of like a paleo, kind of a paleo diet. Like, hey, this is our ancestral diet. This is how we've eaten through, you know, evolution to return to this. And that's where you get people are like, I used to be able to eat anything. And then all of a sudden at 40, I couldn't eat those foods anymore. And all of a sudden I got fat and deteriorated. And it's pretty interesting where, you know, we get a lot of times people are like, well, I could eat all this food and have no problems and I haven't had this. And I'm like, not yet. But at some point, everybody has to return to the ancestral diet. So maybe there's a component of that.
Yeah, I think that's true. Like, I think it just makes sense that, like, those fruit flies evolved with a particular diet, and we as humans evolved with a particular diet. And that diet may even be different, you know, different in different regions of the world, right? So wherever your kind of genetic ancestry is from, that diet would probably be different. You know, one of Dr. Gundry talks about fruit. And that fruit the access we have to fruit right now is unnatural, right? Yeah. Because you have access 24/7. But the reality is there are some places, you know, near the equator that have access to fruit 24/7. So those people probably evolved to be able to eat fruit on a regular basis, where kind of his argument is fruit used to be the signal that winter was coming and you should probably put on fat because you might die. of starvation.
Sure.
And then it was also, you know, in the spring, hey, you survived the winter. Good job. You probably want to put on some fat because you probably almost starved. So fructose is that sign to actually put on fat. And so he's not against fruit. He's just like, take fruit in when it's in season for it. Really, it probably should be more specifically for your genetics, not just your local area.
Yeah. I mean, there's such a case to be made for that, especially looking at like, hey, like, where did my family come from? When we did all of our genetic stuff, like most of my family came from like Denmark and that part of like Northern Europe. And there's a very real ancestral diet associated with that. And I think, you know, when you start looking at, you know, and I've been pretty jiggy in terms of doing like gut biome and especially food allergy tests. And it tends to be the foods that you eat with the greatest frequency are the ones you develop problems with. So understanding diversity, and it really just pays into that. Like, you wouldn't have access to the same things all year round. And because of that, you know, you have to vary the diet. But unfortunately, as you know, and I'm sure Texas does too, it's just easier to eat the same fucking thing every day. I don't have to think about it. It's like the, Albert Mexican Einstein had the exact same outfit, like 10 of them, and just got up and wore. And they were like, you wear the same clothes. He's like, no, I just don't want to think about what I'm wearing. You know, Mark Zuckerberg wears the, you know, probably the same outfit. I mean, his robot does at least. his life form. Dude, when that guy was at those congressional hearings, I'm like, this isn't him. This is a cyborg. He's sitting at home or on a beach in Hawaii laughing that his cyborg is over there, you know, because the dude didn't blink. Like, it was crazy.
Clones, dude.
Yeah, I am not a conspiracy theorist, but
yes, you are.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
That's how it leads off. Chris, I don't mean to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but
if you told me that Zuckerberg had like a clone or a robot, I'd be like, I get it.
Chris, you seen the movie The Sixth Day starring Arnold Schwarzenegger?
I don't think I have seen that one, no.
Sleeper. Oh, it's bad, but it's so good.
The Sixth Day, this isn't End of Days? So he had two movies with days in the title?
And yes, both about basically the same thing.
The end of the world?
Yes. Yeah. So Sixth Day, note it if just you want to kill some time.
Is this our Friday movie review?
Yes, we're going to add it in there.
Okay.
It's, as a scientist, Chris, you're going to be offended, but I'm telling you right now, it's awesome.
So, Chris, like, what's your background? What's your CB?
So I started when I met my business partner, I was at the University of Houston studying mechanical engineering. I always knew that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And I from probably 14, I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. So I studied mechanical engineering so that I could have the fastest way to the highest salary so that I could have money to build, you know, to start a company. When I was at the University of Houston, I met my business partner, Robert. He was actually working at the University of Houston. There's a center called the Texas Center for Superconductivity, and a very famous in the superconductivity world, Dr. Paul Chu. He was actually separating the fullerene, so C60 from C70, that's the next most abundant, et cetera. He was separating those so that they could do superconductivity research on them. One day, Dr. Paul Chu came in and was like, hey, Robert, you guys are young. This material, by the way, this C60 molecule was selling for $6,000 a gram at the time. So that's a lot. And my business partner is from an entrepreneurial background and was like, yeah, let's go. So he started the process of building the equipment in order to actually manufacture these. You have to vaporize graphite. So you can imagine two graphite rods and you're vaporizing graphite, one of the hardest materials on the planet to vaporize. So you've got really high temperatures, and they brought me in as the mechanical engineer to help separate all these materials. And that was like, we sold our first material in 1991.
Wow. So what was the catalyst for the toxicity study years later?
Well, so if you think about, okay, in 91, 10 of the most referenced papers were about fullerenes, right? So there's obviously clear excitement about the capabilities of this material. 96, they win the Nobel Prize. For all intents and purposes, like, this was already supposed to be a ubiquitous material used in tires and batteries and solar cells. And when you have a material that's going to be ubiquitous, we got to work with it, and you need to understand if it's going to be toxic. So a lot of the shapes on the exterior are the same as benzene. Benzene is unbelievably important for modern society. If you just look around you and spot anything that's plastic, does not exist without the benzene ring. Most medicines and detergents are made with the benzene ring, but benzene on its own is actually toxic. So that's why they kind of assumed it would be toxic. Lots of people would be working with it. You've got to do these toxicity studies. So that's why they did that study that ultimately turned into, you know, the longest longevity results. So this, here's one other interesting thing about that study. So Wistar rats typically die at 32 months and they have a known amount of tumors. So every day they live, their tumor mass increases and you have a known amount of tumors at 32 months. Even though the MyVitalC rats lived 90% longer, none of them died with any tumors. Now, a lot of people are like, oh, anti-cancer. And the answer to that is no, like no. There's a huge difference between being a cancer preventative and then also being able to fight cancer once it's metastasized.
Sure. Well, I mean, we know a lot. That's like free radicals within the system. I mean, you know, we have cells that, I mean, like we have cancer cells that die daily, you know, and it's like, you know, cells grow, cells die, new cells come in, and we have this whole, autophagy metabolic clearing deal. But the cells that should die, that continue to grow, become cancerous, and then our immune system fights them. Sometimes they, you know, work through, and whether or not you care about systemic inflammation, you know, I've heard it explained once that systemic inflammation is like background noise, to where your cells can no longer communicate and your immune system can't figure out necessarily who to get rid of and who to keep. And, that disrupting factor. So I wonder if there's something where it's, you know, reducing inflammation, allowing the immune system to do what it's supposed to do, which is fight and kill off potential threats to your system.
Well, there's a lot of things that something that was an anti-inflammatory and an antioxidant, you know, one of the thought processes about aging is that it's oxidation and inflammation.
Sure.
And so something that had those positive characteristics would make sense that you might live 90% longer with something like that.
Well, the other key factor we found is, fat is extremely oxidative. So as we get older and people start gaining more body fat and aren't in as good a shape and start, you know, losing metabolic flexibility, all of a sudden that oxidative fat becomes much more, much more problematic. So maybe there's some issues. Yeah. So, I mean, there's probably a lot of mechanisms here at work, but sounds like you need a whole bunch of research dollars to go in and really pinpoint it.
And we're committed. Like, that's why we're already doing the sleep study. That's why we're already doing the DNA, supporting the DNA age study. And then moving those rats towards doing another longevity study. But you said you've been taking it for a while, right? What have you noticed anything?
Well, I've faced some, some challenges. We had travel, and then
I have not taken it, even though I have it sitting on my counter, and I was actually waiting for this podcast because I know I've seen Chris taking it. And for us, we like to do our own kind of double blind, where I see him taking it, I don't ask him any questions. We come on this, and then I'll start taking it, and we'll see how it works.
Yeah, and then face some, I guess, social stresses that I had to confront.
Why? What's going on? What's going on?
I don't want to get into it now.
This is the place for it. This is the podcast. This is nobody listens to this. This is just our safe zone.
Movie reviews and therapy.
Our cathartic therapy.
It's just John and Chris, old buddies. He's got a lab coat.
But I was able to navigate it and be the cooler head in the situation and provide some direction. May I attribute that to my use of MyVitalC? Maybe. Sleep's been well. And what I do appreciate within one of the packages, the month, you provide a results tracking opportunity. Why I appreciate this is it encourages a range of behavior change. Now, since it's not just taking said supplement, you're asking your user to track their sleep. You're asking your user to be cognizant of energy levels, which could be connected to their fitness and their training, however you describe it, and overall well-being and mental focus. So you're asking your person to be more interoceptive to then provide that feedback. So it's like a step counter on our watch or the Oura Ring, keeping track of our movement or our sleep. That's reinforcing good behavior.
Have you noticed any, I know I've seen you take it in the morning, but have you noticed, is there a better time to take it first thing in the morning before bed, or is it just whenever you can get it in?
So what I can answer is some of our customers say that if they take it later in the day, it can keep them up. That is not true for me, but I'm also the guy who can drink a cup of coffee and go right to sleep. So I might not be that best example, right?
Me too, dude. I could pound like a 6-shot Americano and go put my head on the pillow and fall instantly asleep. Caffeine does absolutely nothing for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But I love drinking coffee.
Me too, right? And actually, it's part, you know, taking my Vital C is part of my coffee routine every day. And it's actually when I made it part of my routine that I made it more consistent. I mean, one of the reasons we made that calendar chart is because some of our customers, well, first, our customers started before we had the ability to do subscriptions. Our customers were clamoring saying, hey, I keep forgetting to order it once a month. Like, can you hurry up and do subscriptions? Like with no benefit, like no discount or anything. And we do have a discount now, but that our customers drove that. And then we get customers who are on subscription like, hey, I need to cancel. You know, I've backed up a bottle, which I get. But we were making that chart to kind of, hey, one, if you're keeping track of it, because a lot of people are just not kind of aware, like not aware of what they might experience and not aware of, and especially when it comes to sleep, right? We all get like 30 minutes, maybe up to 2 hours plus or minus sleep a night, like at least I do. And so if you start taking my Vital C today and you're getting 30 minutes extra every single night, or it feels deeper, how much are you going to notice that? Right. If you're not really keeping track of it. So that's
or unless you're using a sleep tracker where you're using something like the Oura Ring or, you know, I know there's some apps. I have a Garmin watch that I wear, but I don't. I'm also weird about technology when I sleep. Like, I don't want a phone. I don't want any technology in my room. You know, and I think that was. Dr. Matt's
Matthew
book.
Walker.
Yeah. Dr. Matt's book talked about the absence of technology. But then you kind of freak out and you're like, well, there's Wi-Fi streaming around my. Okay, I can't worry about all this. You know.
Yeah, I know people who turn off their Wi-Fi and actually stayed at their house. They're like, can I turn off the Wi-Fi now? I'm like, okay, like. I'm not that concerned about it, but you know, I understand that some people are.
Well, I mean, there's people that are pretty convinced that COVID is a result of 5G. So remember, we had Rob Wolf on that podcast. Our good friend Rob Wolf, when the whole COVID deal was hitting, people were like, "Oh, it's 5G, it's the towers," and people were out burning towers. And so Rob did like. You know, research scientists got in, dug into the research and put out a pretty good one. And then also came and did a podcast on like, if you're buying into this narrative, you're absolutely insane. Like, here's the information. These aren't related. So it's pretty interesting with the conspiracy theorists and all that stuff piggybacked off that wacky QAnon stuff.
The reality is you can write. And in fact, that one video that I did of the guy who sells sunflower seed with black carbon junk in it. He's written 3 or 4 very well written scientific papers that sound like they prove he has C60 in it. But if you know what you're reading, prove that he doesn't. And so like, it's easy to put together, you know, to manipulate data and like convince people like, you know, vaccines are bad and in general, right? And these towers are causing this, like people are interested in believing, and they're kind of grasping for an explanation that is more tangible than that's just how life is.
Well, I've always said that it's actually more comforting to believe that there's some nefarious plot going on with some James Bond-like villain behind the curtain, you know, pulling all the strings, than it is to adhere to the truth, which is, it's probably Occam's razor, which is a whole bunch of people that don't know what the fuck they're doing, just pretending like they are, and just trying to, like, put their fingers in enough dikes so everything doesn't explode. Well,
Chris, what are some tips that people can try to identify supplement frauds, no matter the product they're looking at?
In my industry, I'm just trying to think of the tips. Well, what we've done is really created this demarcation of safer for human consumption, ESS 60. So if you're out there purchasing ESS 60, then you're purchasing something that's going to be of a high quality. And so high quality C60 that's been processed, and usually we're only allowing people to use that name who kind of meet our guidelines, right?
So do you own the patent on this?
We own the trademark on ESS60.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that gives us some control, and we're, again, we've got a lab, we're testing. We don't test. I think part of the reason that the concentrations of C60 and those other products is so low is they're following the protocol. They're not testing the result, right? The protocol from the original Paris rat study was mix it for 2 weeks. What we found is as you went to larger volumes, you actually needed to mix longer. The fluid dynamics are such that you don't get as much disruption of the powder floating in the oil. And so it actually takes longer to mix. The other thing that we do is we actually, because it's taking longer and you've got a pretty strong vortex, you don't want oxygen being, you know, folded into the oil. So we've got a nitrogen buffer gas that actually prevents that. So that's a nice neutral gas. So I think most of those people are just doing those 2 weeks and then like, oh, 2 weeks, it must be the right concentration. And it goes out and it's the right concentration. I think in general, I can share a story with you because David Sinclair is very clear. He takes NMN, right? He's also very clear. He's not recommending you take it. And he's not recommending, and by the way, he's wrote The Lifespan for those listening. Amazing book. Go read it.
It's dense. It's like, I'll just throw that caveat. It's dense. If you're not into science and like really taking your time, it's funny. I would read stuff and then think about it, then go back and reread little pieces. And it was it was definitely something that I could not just power through. It wasn't like reading Clan of the Cave Bear or picking up something and just power through. It was dense, but it was great.
Yeah, yeah. And so he makes it clear that he's taken NMN, and that, you know, you may or may not want to take it. He's definitely not even recommending it. So I'm like, okay, so how do I go find a good NMN? And the reality is that I actually kind of did the research on the papers, identified where the papers had purchased their product and bought it there. But I'm still not satisfied with that. So I actually have my director of research working on like, how do we test NMN? And let's look at what's available on the market and see which ones are our high quality product.
Was he taking it? Was he taking it orally, or wasn't he taking it through an IV maybe, or was he putting
it? No, it was orally.
It was oral.
Yeah.
Okay.
He takes metformin, NMN, and resveratrol, orally.
Yeah. The metformin studies, man. I remember 10, 12 years ago, man, they thought that was like going to be the panacea in terms of extending life. And then we found a bunch of issues with first responders and people doing high intensity exercise mixed with metformin that were running into different like problems like rhabdomyolysis, and it wasn't necessarily as beneficial on the exercise side. So there's been some really interesting stuff with that.
I did read an article, and even David Sinclair kind of supports this, that taking metformin with vigorous exercise, those not taking metformin actually had more muscle mass, and those taking metformin had added less muscle mass. So when I'm and it has a half-life, I can't remember, it's a pretty long half-life, like 8 hours or something. So it stays in your body a long time. So I'm only taking it a couple days a week when I'm not doing high intensity exercise.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, it's, it was interesting that was kind of like the big life extension, and obviously resveratrol too. But yeah, it's pretty interesting when you see this stuff stand the test of time and really go through the research. And I'll tell you the kind of the craziest stuff in terms of performance enhancing is really just, and we were joking about this yesterday, bro science, where you have these bodybuilders that are doing things, and it's pretty interesting just off of some observational anecdotal stuff. Those guys usually are not that far off.
Yeah. So, well, I think there are people who are really in tune with their bodies, right? Like, it's kind of like the old shaman was the guy walking through the forest and could smell that mushroom was of value in some way. Some people are really in tune with their body and can go like, when I take that, it actually really does good things for me.
Well, the big bodybuilders, especially when you look at them today, use insulin. I mean, that's, one of the, within their stack, and, you know, the insulin acts like a transport and they can shuttle nutrients into the cell in really interesting ways. And, it's pretty interesting when you look at like how those guys are using insulin, which is fucking seems insane to me in terms of like the chance of mortality from doing this. They don't use metformin. So I always think, or metformin, if metformin was good at putting on muscle, those guys would probably use that than injecting themselves with, you know, 10, 20, 50 IUs of, you know, Humalog or whatever it is they're using. So it's pretty, I mean, like when I start thinking about like, man, that's, you're purposely taking a healthy individual and potentially putting them into a diabetic coma, like, fuck, dude, to be massive and to step on stage and look good in your underwear, it's some fucking dedication there, you know?
When you put it that way.
I'm always really fascinated with bodybuilding and really just that that subculture, because what they've perfected is the art of creating bigger athletes. And, you know, I come from the NFL, and here at Power Athlete, we're focused on performance, and some of that performance involves creating, you know, larger muscles. One of our programs, mass. Jack Street, you know, that's the sell. I mean, I found this years ago when somebody comes out of the beginner phase, there's kind of a two roads they can split into. They either work on increasing central nervous system efficiency, or they create a larger cross-section size of a muscle to continue ramping up performance. So we have different programs, and they all kind of hit it in different ways. But I've always been fascinated with bodybuilders and the fact that they carry a high amount of muscle mass more than any other group. So, I mean, you have to look at their training, and you're like, hey, if they're a function of their training and the diet, and then also their adherence to not only different nutrition protocols, that I think it's pretty interesting. But I think if you want to know how to put on muscle and you want to look at, you know, I think we make a really interesting kind of thing where we see somebody who's in good shape and we assume they're healthy. When I think if we were to go do blood work and look at these individuals that are standing on stage to win a bodybuilding show, they're probably some of the least healthy individuals from, you know, a toxicity standpoint, but they are carrying a high amount of muscle, you know, and the only way you get that amount of muscle is be extremely metabolically flexible. So, I mean, there's some really fascinating stuff, but like when I look in and was reading some stuff about that insulin deal, I was like, holy shit, this is really some Russian roulette. But that's how these guys are getting so massive. And that's a big difference you've seen between the, you know, the Arnold Schwarzeneggers of the 70s and the 80s, where you started getting into these Dorian Yates, and you see these guys today, like the big Ramy dude that just won the Olympia. These guys are fucking massive. They look like myostatin bulls, which is exactly what they should be doing, because that's the function of their sport. But, you know, I mean, it's you know, it's like for the same reason that in the NFL, you know, you'll see an offensive lineman who's big and fat and people will chastise him. I'm like, no, he gets paid a lot of money to be like that. And
he's right on goal.
Yeah, that's his armor. That's how he's able to do this. You know, I played against Ted Washington, who was 400 plus pounds, and he was fucking huge. And he took up multiple gaps and did his job very, very well. And it helped to be 360, 400 pounds. So it's I think sometimes we confuse this idea of longevity and health with performance and looks, and we try to, you know, secret squirrel this whole thing. And I'm real big on silos, like, who are you, what do you want to do, and how can we help? And I think you know, whenever we find something like this, it's always interesting, and it's worth testing and seeing if we can, you know, see how this, you know, plays out.
Well, that's kind of what I see within what Chris is pushing and promoting from the product internally. It's not aesthetics, it looks, it's well-being, sleep, performing well at your job, having the cognitive ability to knock it out of the park, then go home, and then go to sleep.
Yeah.
So it's...
Well, I mean, sleep is by far the most misunderstood thing. And I think that what I really appreciate about Dr. Matt's book and the kind of the present mode of sleep is there was this kind of like, fuck, man, like through the 80s and 90s, there was this like, hey, I'll sleep when I'm dead. You know, and all these ideas where, you know, if you sleep too much, you're lazy. You know, in the NFL for the coaching deal, you know, you got to sleep at the office and sleep 3 hours a night. You know, Elon Musk sleeps 3 hours. And, you know, there's this kind of like
Leonardo da Vinci. 15 minutes an hour or something. Yeah.
There was this idea of like there was some badge of honor that you were this hard rider and this, you know, unique, you know, individual that could attain and do more and sleep with some form of weakness. And I'm really actually happy to see that there's been kind of a reversal where it's like your brain is much more active at sleep than it is at night. And the sleep is actually reparative, not only to cognitive function, but, you know, not only the body, and it reaches different things. And, you know, now we do all these things all day, from blue light to, you know, let's say leaching plastic and all this other key factors that are affecting us on this back end. And then we wonder why we're having all these issues. So I really appreciate that the sleep discussion has come full circle, but I still don't think people are really ready for it.
I mean, if you think evolutionarily, like, how dangerous is sleep?
Extremely.
Let's be unconscious and available to, saber-toothed tigers for 8 hours at a time. Like, that. So why would the body do that? And like,
unless it was important. Valuable?
Yeah,
I mean,
that valuable.
We're in the most defenseless state we can. You have to go hide in some cave and find that cave and then block it and protect it with a fire and whole deal. And we're completely defenseless. Evolution. I mean, look, giraffes sleep, what, like 15 minutes a day on their feet? I mean, it's pretty amazing that like it was something that this would be that, but I guess you could say, like you said, would be that potentially dangerous became so important, and to be able to deny that just seems insane.
Right. And we are the only species that will go forego sleep for no healthful reason.
Mm. Right. We're also the slowest evolving mammal on the planet. That's another interesting one.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. Like, you know, a horse is born and walks within minutes. You know, I mean, we reach full maturity, 25, 26 years old. I mean, we're the slowest growing mammal on the planet. So,
yeah.
We're also the only one that flies in planes and has lasers and talks about having supplements like ESS60.
And has a podcast.
No, there's other chimps out there that have podcasts. There's some
I guess technically these are radio waves, and dolphins have radio waves. I'm definitely wrong. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
What do you think the next smartest animal on the planet is to us?
Well, I think dolphins are smarter than us.
I think it's octopus.
They have different levels of consciousness.
Octopi are by far the most fascinating organisms on this planet. And the coolest thing, and John Sapolsky and I were going back and forth on this, that he's a buddy of ours who's working on his PhD in marine biology, that there is no fossil lineage. They just showed up and they've been the same. So I think they come from outer space.
Well, do they have any bones to fossilize? Or is it just, I don't know what an octopus is made of.
I think the beak would fossilize.
Yeah, I think something. There's got to be something.
I don't know.
I never thought of it in that realm that they just showed up and they haven't really changed. Like, they come from?
They can change. Like, they have camouflage. They can change color. Like, they can fit through a pinhole.
Chris, we had a doctor from Yale, Lori Santos, who I forget her formal title, but a animal behavioral psychologist.
Yeah.
So she's one of the people that did the studies with monkey currency, which is pretty cool. So yeah, cool things like that.
It was Nabobos were trading food for sex. Wasn't that it?
They did a number of things. Like, cucumbers are more valuable than bananas and all these different things. But then she touched on consciousness of octopuses, and then the whole show stopped, and we're like, okay, let's get into this. And it was like eight different levels of consciousness, different realms. She was talking to us on a different level.
That was epic. And she was
talking down to us at a different level.
I don't believe anybody's talked down to us. I think I mean, at least me personally, I've never felt like that, but I could be delusional. But yeah, we didn't know much about octopi. And I'll tell you, from that moment on, it's been one of my little side projects to research.
Well, there's a Netflix special about a guy who visits an octopus for every day for the life of the octopus. And it's and then there's I don't know if you guys have heard of Radiolab.
Yeah.
Podcast out of it. Yeah. They did a special on an octopus. And it was super deep, and the thing lived nurturing its babies without food for 3 years. Like, it didn't eat for 3 years and was defending its, you know, its eggs. And then finally the eggs, you know, the submarine would only come down, I don't know, every quarter or something. And they would just keep going there, and it was still there, deteriorating, protecting its eggs. And then finally the eggs were gone, and amazing, kind of cool story.
Damn. The doc, I just pulled it up. My Octopus Teacher.
Yeah.
On Netflix. 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. 97% on just Google users. 8.3 on IMDb. This looks awesome.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna...
A diver swims with an octopus that lives in a kelp forest off the coast of South Africa.
I think I'm going to watch that with my kids.
My Octopus Teacher.
My one daughter is super inquisitive about everything. So we will sit and watch this, and then that'll just lead to more and more questions, which will be epic. Yeah, it'll be good.
It's awesome. Really good.
All right. If people want to know more about ESS60, where should they go?
Well, so we made a URL, right? So myvitalc.com/powerathlete.
Ooh,
I like it.
Just for you guys. And there's also, basically, if you go there, there's a coupon code. When you go to that page, you can find our product. And I told you we have a special for subscription. It's like a 25% discount for subscription. You can cancel it any time. We've got 500 five-star reviews. The team is not like talented at talking you out of it. Just take advantage of that offer. And a lot of customers just, you know, they pushed us to have the subscription.
Awesome.
When you check out, use the coupon code POWERATHLETE, and you'll get an additional $15 off of your first order.
Oh, cool.
All right.
Even better.
Cool.
Well, dude, that was awesome. You know what? I'm stoked to give it a try today, and I'm interested to see that your hair looks so good. There's a lot of bounce in there.
Oh, yeah. Chris, yeah, we're in Austin, and yeah, I'm from Houston, so frequent there. We'll aim to connect sometime and get some healthy beverages, not Diet Cokes, and and enjoy some further conversation.
No, that would be really cool. And you can come and tour the facility. That's always nice. And I want to share, you talked about kind of having a challenging situation. It parallels one of our testimonials. Basically, I got our product to an influencer in the UK, and her first video started off with, "I'm in the process of quitting smoking." And you can imagine, like, if I had known she was quitting smoking, there's no way in hell I would have like, "Hey, also take my product and give me a good testimonial," right? But even in the midst of quitting smoking, one of the phrases that she used was, "I have a longer fuse with my children." And that is one of these testimonials that it's kind of hard to pinpoint. But again, it could just go back to sleep. If you're sleeping better, I mean, it's understood that when you have a lack of sleep, your ability to process emotional information and situations is weakened. And so if they're just getting better sleep, then you're going to be better emotionally for sure.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks for another episode of Power Athlete Radio. Dr. Chris, thanks so much for coming on from my co-host, Tex. We'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. Head on over to myvitalc.com/powerathlete if you would like to get 25% off your subscription for ESS60. You can enter the coupon code POWERATHLETE for an additional $15 off your purchase. Until next time, bye!
This message comes from BetterHelp. Can you think of a time when you didn't feel like you could be yourself? Like you were hiding behind a mask? BetterHelp online therapy is convenient, flexible, and can help you learn to be your authentic self so you can stop hiding. Because masks should be for Halloween fun, not for your emotions. Take off the mask with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.